Welcome to the Midday with Norman and Vicki, and we're...
We're in a huge space today.
Yeah, so I was going to say we're in a remote location, not terribly remote, but definitely a change of scene, and we have guests. That's why we're over here in the Buck Studio.
Right. We're here with members of the Madison Savoyards, and we're going to be treated to some Gilbert and Sullivan today. We have, well, let's see, I'm just going to go down the list here. We have Gary McKercher, who's the music director and conductor. And so we'll be talking with Gary. We'll be hearing James Schaffner sing. He's a tenor on loan from the New York City Opera, I understand. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And at the piano, Theodore Reinke. Thanks, Ted, for being here also.
He nods his agreement.
And Gilbert and Sullivan is the subject for our time together here until 12:30. Because the Savoyards are doing two productions, fairly rare pieces, I think. An early piece called Cox and Box.
Is that the first one?
Or The Long Lost Brothers. That's the subtitle.
Is that that's the first collaboration, is it?
No, the first collaboration was Trial by Jury. Sorcerer was second, but Cox and Box was the first... one of the first pieces that Sullivan produced with a librettist named Bernand, and was taken from a theatrical play. So it's very early, just a one-act opera, just like Trial by Jury, but it's not in the GNS canon, which makes it interesting to compare and contrast as you would get in a college classroom.
And why would that be paired with The Sorcerer?
Good question. Length... largely, and both early works, I think, was the thinking behind the production staff's choice of these two.
But the librettist, Bernand, had a similar way of working with words. Do you feel, the music that Sullivan provided for this first production works well?
Right. There is one of the first patter songs produced by Sullivan, sung by... Cox, correct?
Yes.
Box? Yes. Right.
Got two good guesses there.
And I constantly mix them up in rehearsal, which they are the signature music for Gilbert and Sullivan, but also they were here in the early days with Bernand. Fast, light, pitch per word, it just is a foretaste of what's to come in later GNS operas.
Is it worth asking what... the plots are like without going into great detail in these two collaborations?
I would say like absurd, but really funny.
So no different from the later ones, in other
really
words.
No different from the later. Maybe James would like to talk about Cox and Box, a little about the plot.
I could give a very brief description of the plot without telling the fantastic ending. It's one landlord is renting a single apartment to two different people, one who works during the day and one who works at night.
A timeshare.
Exactly, a timeshare. And inevitably, as you would assume, they discover each other, and the story is all based around that. I guess I should give away the ending because it's subtitled The Long Lost Brothers. It turns out that they're actually brothers who have at one time been engaged to the same person. Very confusing, but very lighthearted, very funny.
And very musical.
I mean, I find it funny.
Well?
Do we have a representation?
Yeah,
sure.
Have a song
some
from
piece
that?
From Cox and Box that you'd share with us?
Yes, this is a lullaby that Box sings very early on when he is confused by the fact that in his apartment after he comes home from a long night of setting print or something like that as a printer, he discovers that there are traces of other people in his apartment. And for some reason, he decides that he'll sing a lullaby to his breakfast, which is a piece of bacon.
I'll take a nap and close my eye. Soon shall I be nodding, nodding, need, need, nodding, 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 singing, lullaby, lullaby. La 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 by. Hush-a-bye, bacon, on the cold top, till I awaken, there you will stop. Hush-a-bye, bacon, on the cold top. Lullaby, 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 lullaby,
Well, it's not every day that you hear a lullaby to bacon.
No, it is the famous bacon aria, actually. Yes. We'd like to see it in standard repertoire everywhere.
Well, it's a pretty tune.
Thank you.
Now, I understand that when Sullivan eventually collaborated with Gilbert, and maybe this piece too, was that a response to, let's say, more bawdy burlesques and French operettas of the time. Is there something to that? I read that somewhere.
I'm going to say yes. It seems logical. The person, the impresario, of course, that brought these two together, Gilbert and Sullivan, was D'Oyly Carte, who understood early on that these were both very territorial, volatile personalities, but thought they would make a tremendous creative team. So with regard to what this replaces or tries to in some way to maybe negate, I'm not really sure, but the whole impetus of the coupling of these two was brought about by D'Oyly Carte, of course, and the light opera company. The D'Oyly Carte was in operation in England for decades. Maybe they're still back up, but they were down for a while. But as Evan Richards was saying this morning, their whole collaboration was about almost complete and total control of every aspect of the creation, right down to choice of orchestral members and of course, of singing cast members as well.
And the overtures, I guess, were typically a matter of kind of a pastiche of the hit tunes, as was fashionable?
Exactly. What's to come next? Sometimes abbreviated, but always you'll get the great tunes of any particular production in that overture as well.
Not unlike the overtures of Offenbach, for that, you know, for that matter, very similar in that way.
So, what else do we have in our piano bench here that we can pull out from Cox and Box or
well,
Sorcerer?
We have a rather anti-love ballad, if you will, a song called "It Is Not Love" from the Sorcerer. Would you like to set this one up?
If I can,
sure.
The Sorcerer, so named, is all about love, as James will demonstrate for us ably, but in fact also about class struggle. The primary characters, the protagonists of the opera, are Aline and Alexis, Alexis being James to my right. They are betrothed to be married. They have very meddling parents on either side, who, by the way, eventually couple themselves, which makes probably life complicated later on, but we're not
so
worrying
often
about
does.
That. So they're betrothed to be married, and they realize that their love is so profound and so wonderful that everyone should have a love like theirs, regardless of rank, station, economic background, etc., etc., etc. So they devise a little plan, or at least Alexis does. Aline is very much more cautious about this, to consult a sorcerer, a magician, to administer in secret a love potion known as a filter. Must be a French name for the... All things French are not understandable. which will be administered to all the village members anonymously through sort of a big tea party. So this happens. And James, what's number six? Yeah, you're singing about...
Alexis wants very badly for Aline to also drink the filter, and she refuses, saying that their love is beyond the chance of change, and Alexis takes great offense at this, wanting to not end it, but he exclaims that this is not love that we have, and that's what you'll hear now.
From the sorcerer.
Thou hast the power, thy vaunted love, to sanctify all that above, despite the gathering shade, to make that love of thine so pure, that come what may, it must endure, till time itself shall fade. Thy love is like a flower, that fades within the hour. If such thy love, O shame, call it by other name. Thy love is but a flower that fades within the hour. If such thy love, O shame, call it by other name. It is not love. Is the power and thine alone to place me on so proud a throne that kings might envy me? A priceless throne of love untold, more rare than orient, pearl, and gold. But no, thou wouldst be free. Such love is like a ray that dies within the day. For such thy love, O shame, call it by other name. Such love is like the ray that dies within the day. If such thy love, O shame, call it by other name, it is not love.
Wow. So does it take an operatic voice to sing Gilbert and Sullivan leads?
I think it helps.
Help there.
If anyone that hires Gilbert and Sullivan people are listening, then absolutely it takes an operatic voice. I wouldn't say it takes strictly an operatic voice. I think that it's definitely I mean, this is the beginning of crossover music and something that it developed eventually into musical theater, which we hold so dearly here in America. But I think that it doesn't hurt to have an operatic voice. Certainly some of the things that are written are very operatic. But there are also sort of early indications of character voice usage in some of the Patter songs and in some of the numbers, even in The Sorcerer. But...
Did they borrow? Did Sullivan borrow from operas? He has that reputation for, you know, snitching a little bit from Balo and Mosca right here, and maybe...
I'm not sure if borrow is the right word. Stolen, perhaps. if not directly stolen, I mean, they're definitely parodies. I mean, parody is what it's all about when it's Gilbert and Sullivan, I think, so...
And is that what has made this form last? There are Gilbert and Sullivan societies all over the world, I suppose, and... very avid fans.
Zealots,
identify?
I would
zealots?
Call them.
Well, okay.
close to some sort of affliction, but a very happy one. A really happy one.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just think that Sullivan was, interestingly enough, he wrote a bunch of sacred music, too, and so-called serious music, mm-hmm. that it was not at all popular. Really never made the top, you know, tune chart. But he had a remarkable melodic gift. If people walk away from these two productions this weekend not humming at least a couple of bars from one or the other, I would be very surprised. But he had, I'm not a particularly well-grounded GNS person, but what I know of is that the tunes are just, he's like Mozart that way. He had such an incredible melodic gift. And coupled with a librettist who had an imagination and a breadth of education that I think was other than that, he had a really great personal library.
Well, he was wired, Gilbert was wired into current events too, though, right?
Right.
I mean, all these
right.
references to things that were going on at the time.
Exactly, which have currency, as Evan said this morning, currency even now.
And Savoyard's has this way of every now and then plugging in some even more current references, just little turns of phrases from the original.
Oh, yes, and you'll hear them this weekend. We have a couple of local references which should tickle people's fancies.
So Gilbert loved kind of turning things upside down and really making things, current. And on the other hand, Sullivan, I understand, the two personalities were quite different, weren't they? He really didn't like poking fun at the people who would provide money for his ventures and so
right,
forth.
Right, right. I wish Evan Richards was here, as he has lots more volumes, more information on this than I do. But first of all, the relationship between the two men was very stormy, mm-hmm. very stormy. And in fact, Doidekart probably had to separate them in the ring or in the rehearsals many times. There were several blow-ups. All was finally brought together again by Doidekart was the major glue there. So I think that it wasn't a collaboration that was going to last forever, but when it did, it really produced some really remarkable things for the lyric stage.
And Sullivan got credit for, let's say, rediscovering a lot of the music of Franz Schubert. He was a serious composer in his own right, and also a promulgator of the serious works of other composers. So
sure.
It might have been a little hard for him to take Gilbert at face value, mm-hmm. given some of the word twists he was given.
Well, let's see. Do we have one more piece, perhaps?
We sure do.
Oh, good.
In the first act of The Sorcerer, Aline and Alexis are together, and Alexis takes this time to explain to Aline his philosophy about love and how love must exist for love alone, and that is the title of this song, For Love Alone, from the first act of The Sorcerer.
On many kinds of food, I know some love for rank and some for duty. Some give their hearts away for empty show, and others love for youth and beauty. To love for money, all the world is prone. Some love themselves and live all lonely. Give me the love that loves for love alone. I love that love, I love it only. I love that love, I love it only. Give me the love that loves for love alone. I love that love, I love it only. Whew. What man for any other joy can thirst, whose loving wife adores him duly? Want, misery, and care may work their worst, if loving woman loves you truly. A lover's thoughts are ever with his own, none truly loved is ever lonely. Give me the love that loves for love alone. I love that love, I love it only. I love that love, I love it only. Give me the love that loves for love alone. I love that love, I love it only.
Not bad for a boy from Missouri. Do you like it, that temple?
Yeah, I do.
I'll have to remember that for future.
For the performance.
My own tempo? Never.
Well, speaking of the performances, these two productions of Cox and Box and The Sorcerer, you'll have 2 weekends to catch them in Madison. Starting this Friday and Saturday night, there's a Sunday afternoon performance each weekend, July 20th through the 29th. They're at Music Hall, which is a wonderful space, I would imagine, for such productions.
It's a great space.
Good
really.
Stage.
It's actually a contemporary with Gilbert and Sullivan, actually.
Ah, yeah. Well, now that you mentioned
1876 it. In its original form.
Mm-hmm. It's on the UW-Madison campus, so... let's see. I guess you'll find information at madisonsavoyards.org.
That's pretty straightforward.
Correct.
So do you have to sometimes wait for people to finish reacting to the punchline of one
Time.
Line before you go on to the next thing? Is timing a little tricky in these?
You do, I think, with any musical comedy, of course. Sometimes the punchlines aren't as obvious in Gilbert and Sullivan as one might assume they'd be. But they're there. You just sometimes it takes a second listening, actually, to recognize them. Rather hidden in the text somewhat, but...
Sort of like Shakespeare, you have to study up.
Indeed.
Well, yes, I've seen some elaborate program notes for Gilbert and Sullivan, to, you know, footnoting all of the humor.
Absolutely, yeah. It's actually quite highbrow, if you will. I mean, if you will pardon the expression, for music that is light and frivolous, it's interesting. I do a lot of contemporary music, a lot of avant-garde contemporary operas particularly. And on the other hand, I do a lot of operetta, and not a whole lot in between. I do a Traviata here and there, but... It's fun for me to keep things sort of polarized as a singer. I do some of this and some of that, but there is so much more intellectually in Gilbert and Sullivan that we don't necessarily take the time to delve into, and that's something that I think is definitely worth checking out. But
those of you that really want to check it out can go to the Madison Public Library and find Isaac Asimov's complete compendium of librettos and heavily footnoted. So all of these somewhat arcane references are explained sometimes to maddening detail by Mr. Asimov, but it's really a remarkable source for GNS lovers.
Did we ever do that as a quiz question? The only person to have a book in every category of the Dewey Decimal System?
Isaac Asimov.
How about that? So you heard it here, and in case you hear it again in question form in a couple of months, well, you've got a leg up on the quiz question.
That's right, and which we'll have very shortly. First, we want to thank tenor James Schaffner.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming. And Ted Reinke, thank you for so wonderfully accompanying, playing those orchestral reductions.
Promising some lively evenings of Gilbert and Sullivan twice over, Cox and Box and The Sorcerer, both in one action-packed
right. And Gary McCurcher, the music director.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here, sharing some of the Gilbert and Sullivan and Bernand and Sullivan fun.
That's right.